He kind of tackles it a little bit in Notes from Underground as well, I think. He kind of plays on this idea of somebody who kind of, again, I'm going to get this wrong, I can just tell you, but I'll do my best. It kind of plays on this idea of this individual who was working for, I don't know if it's the Bureau or some sort of kind of commissioned office, and he's kind of just raising trouble because he wants to raise trouble, and then eventually retreats, has enough money to kind of come back to this sort of place, and he kind of calls it the underground, where he's listening to society through this crack in the wall, and you know, views himself as a mouse sometimes in the book. But he kind of plays on some of these sorts of nihilistic moments in that book as well, as this character is kind of trying to reassociate themselves with friends and almost trying to, and almost finds themselves without meaning to, deliberately debasing or frustrating the sort of groups of friends and the idea of friendship, and then trying to kind of come back to it and almost redeeming themselves by meeting this individual and then this lady, and then almost losing that as well. And it's a fantastic sort of I think view of that. Would you say that's anywhere near correct, Sarah?
Yeah, no, I think you've touched on a lot of the important aspects of the novel there. The Notes from Underground is one of the most fascinating perhaps one of the most challenging of Dostoevsky's works, even though it's one of his shortest. Well, it's not one of his shortest, but you know, compared to his other big novels, it's considerably shorter. And many people also sort of view it as philosophically important, as a kind of a precursor to existentialism. What's really interesting about the protagonist of this character, whose name we never find out, we just end up referring to him as the underground man. What's interesting about him is that he desperately wants life to be meaningful, but he does not accept the way that life has been marketed to him, if you like. So he's told, he reads all the latest scientific developments, and he's told that that human beings are rational animals, and that scientific advances will mean that we'll ultimately be able to understand all the motivations of human behavior, we'll be able to, you know, even go so far as being able to predict human behavior and really unpick it and sort of categorize it and understand it in these terms. This is progress. But what the underground man feels is, he looks around him and, you know, he sees meaninglessness, he sees cruelty, he sees ugliness, he sees destitution, he sees workplaces where people fulfill the roles of, essentially kind of almost automatons. You know, they're just having to go through the motions. And he protests, and he says, no, you know, this isn't meaningful. But the thing is, he doesn't know what is. He doesn't know what the answer is. So his only answer is to basically make a nuisance of himself, you know, and to protest and rebel and to be rude and unpleasant, because he can't. You know, he refuses to accept the life that he feels he's being sold, but he can't find any alternative. And so ultimately, he has these awkward encounters with his former schoolmates. He has this desperately moving but ultimately quite brutal encounter with a young sex worker called Lisa. He's unsufferably cruel to her because he can't bear the thought that she might be feeling sorry for him. He ends up alone and essentially just sort of locked in this circle of talking to himself. So it's a really powerful text. It's a text that I'm never able to read without in some way feeling upset. I think it's always upsetting because you see this person who is desperately unhappy and who doesn't know how not to be, but kind of almost insists on his right to be unhappy, because he does not want to feel that he's being shoehorned into this kind of mechanistic way of understanding life. So it's a really, really powerful piece.
Mm, Yeah, within there as well, he talks a little bit about the idea of this sort of palace, or this like glass palace or crystal palace, this place which is this sort of ideal, and now even if that ideal was there, they'd still be kind of you're almost making rude gestures, even if the hand was in the pocket so that they couldn't see, they'd still be deliberately trying to do something to go against this sort of ideal, just to be able to go their own way, just to prove they have that sort of notion of free will. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that it was originally published in a paper in sort of two parts, and it's one of those works that, and you mentioned this sort of warning at the very beginning, that people very often think that Dostoevsky's writing his own thoughts or ideas into this individual and then portraying that, which is, yeah, one of those things we need to be very careful we're not doing. We're not trying to say that this is what Dostoevsky thought, but actually these are ideas Dostoevsky was exploring within this sort of narrative framework.
Exactly. Yes, it's what, you know, what would it be like for someone to feel to feel that cut off from the world, to feel that the world had absolutely nothing to offer them because the terms on which the world was being presented to them were just not acceptable. That is, you know, that is what he was trying to do. And on the issue of the Crystal Palace, this was inspired when Dostoevsky went to Western Europe, and he went to London and he saw the Great Exhibition housed in the, you know, the literal Crystal Palace. I think what he found slightly terrifying there was again this sense of, you know, humanity is progressing and will keep on progressing and progressing and progressing and become this kind of monolithic entity that will just keep, you know, marching forwards, trampling over, you know, how many, goodness knows how many hundreds and thousands of people, you know, and the ordinary individual voice will be lost. So there's, you know, there's this quite humorous moment in Notes from Underground where he says something, I'm going to terribly paraphrase, but he says something along the lines of, it may be a crystal palace, but it might just as well be a chicken coop if all it does is keep the rain off your head. You know, so what value all the sort of technological achievement if it only has this sort of very prosaic practical purpose? And if I may, actually, that's another thing I want to emphasize about Dostoevsky, is that he's wickedly funny. And I think people don't realize this, the sort of the first reading, because they are often very struck by the kind of the darkness and the, you know, the almost kind of gothic nature of it. But underneath that, he has the most wickedly dark sense of humor. And Notes from Underground, I think it's also tremendously upsetting, but it's also in many ways tremendously funny. It's the kind of humor that is like, this is going to age me terribly, but if you imagine Basil Fawlty hitting his car with the branch of the tree, it's that sense of, you know, that moment of humour is born out of Basil Fawlty's sense of his own mediocrity and his own frustration at the fact that his life is just basically rubbish and he doesn't know how to change it. You know, but that is the kind of, you know, that the underground man walking down Nevsky Prospect in the center of St. Petersburg, thinking he's tremendously brave because he's dared to bump shoulders with this dashing officer, you know, or, you know, if he goes into a bar, then he might, you know, he might have the excitement of being thrown out of the window because he's got into a fight. All of these, you know, they're meant to be funny. You know, we are meant to laugh at him. We're meant to find him ridiculous, this character, you know, but for Dostoevsky, that's also part of his humanity. You know, we are all to a certain extent laughable. Being human is pretty ridiculous, and that's what Dostoevsky wants to draw out as well.